welcome back to Hotter in Person Podcast. It is Jillian here, and I'm so happy that you've come back to join me today. I have such a fun interview, and it's funny because I have been watching this person on YouTube and on digital media platforms for so long. This is probably one of the first influencers that I've actually ever discovered, and that's because she has been doing this for a very long time. Starting off with her job at Refinery29, you might recognize Lucy from the YouTube series Try Living with Lucy and 5 Days Of, where Lucy would challenge herself to trying something for 5 whole days. Whether that's sleeping on the floor or only eating pizza for 5 days straight, she has tried some pretty wacky things on there, but that was quite a bit ago. Now she is a YouTube and content creator doing her own lifestyle content where she posts just updates going on with her life, in addition to continuing this little challenge thing that she still keeps with her even after years of leaving Refinery29. She has also just come out with a podcast, and she's going to tell us all about how she got into that. So I'm going to stop talking and let you listen. Here is my interview with Lucy Fink.
Lucy Fink, welcome to Hotter in Person.
Thank you, Jillian. I'm so excited to be here.
You went to Johns Hopkins U for neuroscience. How did that transition get to being in front of the camera in college?
Great question, because that is a big, big leap. So when I was in high school, I kind of had these two passions. On the one hand, I was really interested in medicine and thought I could see myself going down the medical route. But on the other hand, I was the president of the drama club and loved performing, knew I wanted to join an a cappella group in college, and just always loved making videos and being on camera. So when I got to Johns Hopkins, honestly, the university is just so well known for medicine that I thought, this must be a sign. I got accepted to this college. I guess I'll go down the medical route. So I did start out as a pre-med neuroscience major. Didn't really know what type of doctor I would become off of that. Maybe a neurosurgeon. I was also interested in plastic surgery and thought, you know, I'll just see where this takes me. But within about a year of being on campus, honestly less, I was surrounded by so many students who were so passionate about medicine that I realized all of my passion was being channeled into the a cappella group I joined and the YouTube videos that I was making for the Johns Hopkins undergraduate admissions office. And I just had started doing all these extracurriculars that were clearly media and entertainment based. So within the first year, I switched my major to the creative writing department, which was kind of the most communications friendly, media friendly major that Hopkins had to offer. And never looked back. And I ended up not going down the medical route, although I still look back fondly on the classes I took, and I still like to read books about the brain and the eyes. I'm really fascinated with it. I just find it more of an interest, not a life's calling.
Mm-hmm. Where the YouTube was a hobby, now it's like the medicine stuff is more like a pastime hobby.
Exactly. Like on the side, I love listening to podcasts about brain science and the body, and I'm really interested in that stuff, but I leave that to my times to read a book or listen to a podcast. And then all day, every day, I get to be doing the fun stuff where my passions really lie.
Mm-hmm. And the digital media companies were all fairly new when you graduated. So did you have like a certain career goal in mind when you first graduated college?
Yeah. So when I graduated, the companies that we know today, like the BuzzFeeds, the Refinery29s, Vice, they were not really yet doing what they started doing. And I had such a single-minded view of what being on camera meant. And to me, that meant either I was going to go work on the news and be a legitimate news anchor, or if I wanted to do something a little bit more fun, it was going to be like the e-news side, and I was going to be celebrity gossip reporting on the red carpet. And neither of those pathways suit me at all. I could not see myself reporting in front of a burning building. And similarly, I couldn't see myself at all talking to celebrities on a red carpet, because I personally don't follow celebrity culture or designers. Like, I would have no idea what someone was wearing at the Met Gala or what they wore the year before. And, you know, I know they're, especially now having worked at Refinery29 I know there are many people who that is their passion. So let's leave that to them. I'm not the one to interview the celebrities. Mm-hmm. But because I didn't know what route was left, sort of my brain was telling me that the only route left was to be behind the scenes and to be a producer, which is why my first job out of school was at Ogilvy and Mather as an associate producer. And I started working behind the scenes, sponsored content, working with brands in a really cool capacity. But I just could not shut off my internal drive and interest in being on camera. And I knew I didn't want to be on the news or on the red carpet, but I just kept telling everyone that I met at Ogilvy that I wanted to be on camera. And when they would ask me what I wanted to make, I would just say, you know, honestly, I just want to make content that is relevant and applicable to people my age, the type of content that I would maybe stop to watch if it popped up on my Facebook. At the time, Facebook was really where people were watching this content. And fast forward, within a year of working at Ogilvy, this woman who was the chief creative officer at Ogilvy wound up becoming the COO at Refinery 29 and thought of me when, I guess her job at Refinery was to build up their video division. She thought of me from that one meeting we had at Ogilvy where I like dumped all my life's passions on her. And she brought me over to Refinery and they put me in this really cool role where I got to produce my own YouTube series. They sort of let me pick what series I wanted to make and let me self-produce it and host it. And it lived on their YouTube channel. And I did that for 5 years, started a handful of series for them, became sort of their YouTube host, their go-to YouTube host, got to go to VidCon many times, got to do a lot of really cool interviews. I did have the chance to do a lot of celebrity interviews, even though I would say the crux of my content was just lifestyle content. And it led me to, come 2019, I felt like I had built enough of a social media following on my own that I felt comfortable taking the leap to leave their channel and just full-time dedicate myself to all of my own personal platforms. And that's where we're at today.
Mm-hmm. And all of what you just said reminded me, I don't know if you've ever watched or listened to the podcast, How I Built This by Guy Raz, but mm-hmm. he asks these big entrepreneurs, these very successful people, like how much of your success do you place on luck or like hard work? And it seems like for you, it really is a combination of both. I'm going to have you answer it, but like you had so much hard work leading up to it, but then like this amazing opportunity just landed in your lap and kind of set you off. So how would you answer the question?
I have to say it's, you know, I don't know, maybe the people in my life who love me and support me would try to give me the benefit of the doubt and tell me it was more work than luck. I have to say, I feel like it was 50-50 because, I mean, first and foremost, I have to set up that I feel like I even came into the media world from such a privileged upbringing and background that gave me advantages from the get-go. I mean, first and foremost, I was able to graduate college without student loan debt, which set me up immediately for having comfort in taking on a media role. Like my salary at Ogilvy and Mather as an intern, which was like my starting title, was like $20 an hour. And I was also living in New York City. And it's hard to really have a media, to say I'm just going to try to succeed in the media world. We all know that that can be very lucrative, but can also not be. So I had that financial stability up front of not having any debt that I had to pay off. And on top of it, I did have a decent number of like friends and family members from my real life that had some early connections that helped me make connections. Like I really think this, not just the media world, but the corporate world in general is a lot about networking and who you know. And I remember in college, I had a chance to be on the Today Show as sort of like a millennial voice. I went on 6 or 7 times as a college student and got to have this like live TV exposure that of course was part of my resume once I graduated. Mm-hmm. And I got that first appearance because a family friend of mine was a food producer at NBC and she introduced me to the right person to allow that opportunity to unfold, which then, you know, I feel like that's the door opening, but then at that point, she sort of passed me off to the lifestyle producers. And from there, it was about me capturing their hearts and, you know, showing them what I could do. So just as an example, my first appearance on the Today Show, they sent me from Hopkins to the city to go do the show. I did it. And then I followed up with that new producer who I was in touch with and sent her the next day 10 more segment ideas that I would love to come on as a guest to talk about. And over the next 6 months, wound up coming back multiple times. And, you know, it's there's only so much that a connection can get you. And then you have to be putting in either the FaceTime or the work to get to the next level. So I genuinely feel like a lot of my success has been like right place, right time. But once I'm in that place and time, really showing up and exceeding expectations and not being afraid to like use my voice and say what I want and show people what I can do.
But with that transition from doing all of these series, like you gave Refinery 29 all these series, and then you decided to take, like, you decided to leave and you went your own route and started doing YouTube and content creation on your own. Having given them all of these great series, how did you come up with your own content and ideas once you started your own platform?
Yeah, so the two things basically that I wasn't allowed to take with me, quote, was the intellectual property of those two series. So there was Try Living with Lucy and Lucy for Hire. That said, the contracts were so, I guess, loose, or there was not a lot of language. We had such an amicable parting. That first year that I left was actually a year when I went off on my own. I signed with a talent agency and started doing my own work and had a contract in place with Refinery 29 for 16 videos that I would deliver them in that year. So even though I left my salaried position where I was making like 52 plus videos in a year every week, I started off my first year alone in contract with them to keep working with them. So it was sort of this slow ease out. And then come 2020, we didn't re-sign the contract because, like, just at the start of the year, the world shut down and then they were bought by Vice and a lot of stuff changed. But honestly, that I feel like the only things I knew I couldn't take on my platform were the names of the series. I remember getting clear confirmation from my lawyers and my new team that, yes, Refinery 29 might own the name Try Living with Lucy, but they do not own Lucy Fink trying something new. Mm-hmm. So then there were many times when I created new videos on my personal YouTube channel that is like, I tried this for 5 days, or I tried that for a week, or I kind of kept up the momentum around it without using the name. Mm-hmm. And same with Lucy for Hire. That series I love so much. I personally want that series to become a TV show in the future. And it's obviously never going to be called Lucy for Hire, but I sort of rebranded the show as On the Job and started doing it on my own channels and just sort of changed the format a little and the style of the videos. We don't use the same graphics. We don't use the same music cues, but they don't own me trying someone's job. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of how I got around those legalities.
You built this audience that was following you because they loved your series, and now you're able to still have the same kind of content, but just with a different name.
Yes. And the truth is, by the time I left Refinery, I also didn't want to keep making those series as my only forms of content. I was feeling super, not burnt out, but just bored of being the 5-day challenge girl. I felt like the 5-day challenge format just became me. It like leaked into my real life in so many ways. Like, I just, as an example, I would be at the Thanksgiving table with my cousins and I'd go to take a bite of something, and like my cousin, you know, a Gen Xer across the table would be like, 5 days of eating stuffing, ha ha ha. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this literally, like, I don't need every aspect of my life to peg me as the 5-day girl.
Right.
And honestly, I was right. I felt like, what's that girl's name? Shirley Temple. Like, she's known for that one thing And then who knows what else she does after that. I mean, maybe people know how Shirley Temple grew up, but I just think of this little tap dancing girl, and that's all I know. And I was like, I don't want my whole life in the future. I'm still young. I wasn't even married at this point. And I'm like, I have so much more I want to do in my career, and I don't want people to just get so used to the 5-day challenges that I can't branch out. And it was already happening. Like, even when I put up the first episode of Lucy for Hire, or I even started another series for a brief period of time called What Do You Think? And it was like an on the street question series. And I put that up as like an interim, you know, I needed to regroup on the Try Living with Lucy season, because it took so much energy and effort to make those episodes. Each episode took a whole week to shoot. And so I would put out another piece of content, and the comments were like, where the hell is 5 days? We want that show back. And I was like, damn, we got to get this audience to accept me in other types of content, because I will not be doing 5-day challenges forever.
A lot of these influencers, I feel like, put themselves in a box sometimes when they go viral for a certain subject. And I think that's kind of what happened with you in the beginning. But fortunately, you've been able to branch out and maintain that following and grow.
And listen, like, that's an amazing way to grow a following, especially on a platform today like TikTok. I genuinely believe the platforms that grow the fastest have a very niche either topic they talk about or a very niche style of videos. And if you go to their page, you can just endlessly scroll through hundreds of the same type of video. And it's very satisfying from a consumer standpoint. But that, because I did that back then, now when I migrated onto a platform like TikTok or started really building up my own YouTube and my own Instagram, I made it such a point to not have a niche, because I want my niche on my channels to be me. I will be in every piece of content, and that's the niche. You're coming to watch me, but I might be doing a dance, or I might be playing with my son, or I might be baking something, and I'm the niche, and I don't have to rely on a series or a format.
Right. Now it's about the personality and getting to know you and your life.
Yes.
And speaking of your personal life, your husband has gone from seeing you for being that neuroscience major to the content creator you are today. You guys have been together for so long, and we can even find him in a bunch of your content. How did he feel at first, like, being part of the channel, and how does he feel now? Is he just, like, used to it? Like, yeah, sure, I'll hop in.
I would have to say, you know, back in the New York City time when we were pre-married, or even when we were married but didn't have kids yet, he's always been more private than I am. He's always, you know, he doesn't ever ask, can we make a video about something? But if I wanted him in content, which back in the day, like especially around my wedding time and a lot of my moving content, which was moving in with him or moving with him, it made sense that he was part of the content, and he just sort of accepted that. So he's definitely not super comfortable on camera. I think he's great on camera, but he says he feels uncomfortable. So in order to get his brain ready for a shoot, I sometimes have to tell him like a week or two in advance that we're going to be shooting something on a set day, and give him like the exact time frame and prep him in that way. And that's always helpful. I cannot come to him and be like, hey, camera's going on, get ready. Like he would not be happy with that. He needs to like mentally prepare. And so that's sort of in the past, I would just give him warning. These days, to be honest, he's like gotten way, way, way less interested in being part of things. And I think, I don't know if it's because he switched from a finance career to the media space. So now he works in media. And I mean, I know like his last boss at the last job he worked at had daughters who followed me. And like, I guess the boss mentioned to Michael, like, my daughters follow you. And then there's a few videos with Michael on the channel. So then his boss was watching the videos. And I don't know if he just got like, you know, if nothing bad came out of it, it was just that is embarrassing to him. And I think he just tries to shy away. So I still do get him to be in stuff, but he's definitely not the happiest version of himself when we are filming or doing a photo shoot or something like that.
Got it. Got it. I'm always curious because it's like these people aren't trying to make this like part of their career, but sometimes you just get thrown into it and then you can become a viral sensation.
Yeah, I mean, he's very, very supportive of me doing it. He's even been very supportive of the fact that like we now have a son and we both agreed that we didn't want our son to become like the face of my platforms in any way, but that we were going to show his face. Like we decided not to hide him with emojis or something like that. And he's been really on the same page as me of like, this is your job, this is what you do. It makes sense for him to be part of this. He's part of your life and I'm part of your life. So even though it's not my favorite thing to do, I'll be there to support you. Otherwise, run free little bird and like kind of just navigates around me in the house. If I have a tripod up and I'm doing something, he just like will come in and be like, "Can I talk? Are you filming audio?" He knows to ask before he starts clanging things around.
And with becoming a mom, and now I see you're a homeowner, which congrats. I see that all
Thank you.
your content now is like moving into the home space, mom content. How do you make these transitions of what your content was about? And now your content is a lot of this moving and mom content, but you know, that wasn't what it used to be. And you have this following, like you were saying, that was following you for certain reasons. And I guess now they follow you to just like follow your life. How is that transition? And also, how does it change your schedule and the kind of content that you come out with? How does all of that change as your life changes?
Well, it's kind of always operated that way. I would say that from the time I got engaged and then like started making engagement content to I'm getting married. Now here's all this wedding content. Now I'm moving. Here's my moving content. It's like whatever's happening in my life just becomes what I'm actually thinking about in my day-to-day, which then translates into what I'm talking about when I pick up the camera. I also think like just like anyone else who's going through something in their life, whether my phone is hearing me or whether I'm like searching content about that topic, my phone starts giving me content about the stuff that's relevant to me, which then further inspires me to go down that route with my own content. Like it becomes the content I'm watching. So then it becomes the content that's applicable to what I feel inspired to create. And I would say with the whole motherhood journey, it definitely was shocking to me because when I got pregnant, I remember being so adamantly against my content transitioning into the motherhood space in any way because it just felt like that's not how I identified. And, you know, I knew I didn't want to fall into the category of mommy blogger, but that's such a vague phrase. I just remember kind of thinking, like, I'm just going to keep talking about all the other stuff I used to talk about, even though I'm pregnant now and have a baby. And then, pretty quickly into my pregnancy, like, once I actually announced the pregnancy and once I got to the later stages, and then definitely once I got to postpartum and had the baby, you realize how all-consuming that is. It's almost impossible to just keep talking about stuff as if it wasn't happening and kind of act like you are not a mom now and didn't just go through this life-changing experience just to keep your platform the same. That felt like unaligned with me just continuing to evolve as a person. So I have been able to set up boundaries of like trying to make sure that not all of my content is about that because I know I have so many people following me who are like not at that stage of life or don't want kids at all. So I never want to be exclusive and just only start making my content about parenthood. But the truth is, once you become a parent, it's like it takes over everything, especially from the mom's perspective of your mind and your body. And as a content creator who just thinks to myself, what's going on in my life? What do I want to talk about? That's what I am inspired to make content about. It was really hard to not make content about that. So just sort of happened naturally. And I do think that my audience is, even the people that are not trying to be moms or aren't at that stage, I think that they find it, if nothing else, just entertaining and interesting to watch someone going through something completely different from them.
That's why I watch. I love the mommy content and the new home content. But how has your work life changed during this time where, you know, now you are taking care of your son and you're moving in? How does that change your schedule with creating content?
Well, in the very beginning, it was a drastic change. And I mean, I gave myself a couple months of maternity leave. And then I kind of always had this thought that once I had a baby, I was going to want, my mom was a stay-at-home mom and my husband's mom was a stay-at-home mom. And, you know, neither of them had paying jobs. And not, I always knew I wasn't going to do that. Like, I always knew that I wanted to work, but I did sort of have this feeling that once I had a baby, my priorities, my work priorities were going to change so much, and that all of a sudden work would not become that important to me. And so maybe I would just like part-time work. And that was sort of my plan going into coming back from maternity leave. We wound up hiring a nanny in New York City for 3 out of 5 days in a week. And then the other 2 days, I was committed to being full-time stay at home with our son. And it took probably like 2 months of us going through that schedule for me to realize that actually having a baby had the opposite effect for me and made me want to work more, made me feel like more creatively inspired to have my job and to have my like 5 days in a week to do what I want to do. And I was getting all these ideas and business ideas and entrepreneurial fires were being lit. And I was just like, when we moved to the suburbs, declaration, we're getting a 5 day a week nanny and I'm going back to work full time. And so that was our projected plan, and we followed through with it. So we moved to the suburbs over the summer. Also, our toddler did start going to a preschool 5 days a week in the mornings. So like all morning he's at school, and then 5 days a week in the afternoon, he's either with our nanny or my parents or my husband's parents. He's now the only grandchild, so gets a lot of time from everyone. And so he's occupied all week, and basically I can be as hands-on with him during the day as I want to be based on what's going on in my work schedule. So if I have a full day of meetings or shoots and whatnot, I can be totally out of the picture and he's handled. But if I'm having a light day, and honestly, most days I stop, he comes home from school around 12:30 and I stop and eat lunch with him, or I eat lunch while he comes home and plays. He already had lunch at school, but we like play together for a little bit before his nap. And then usually around the time he wakes up from the nap, I see him again. My office in our house is like kind of connected to our main kitchen space. So I'm sort of always flowing in and out of the main areas, and I run into him multiple times in the house in a day and can like see him and hug him and talk to him. But yeah, I'm at this point, I'm like, quote, back to work full time. So he's like covered with childcare and I can sort of do my regular work day, which is great.
I feel like you very rarely hear a mom feel so inspired to get back to work shortly after she gives birth. And I absolutely love that that is how you feel, because it's a whole new side of motherhood where instead of feeling like you need to constantly be with your child, and I know that there can sometimes be like mom guilt when you go back to work, just the fact that your son is inspiring you to work harder is really nice.
Yeah. I have to say I'm not surrounded by many others like that, at least in the communities that I like lived in the city and now in the suburbs. I would say at least 50%, if not more, of the moms have totally stopped working. And then maybe the other like 40% of them have some sort of hybrid half-time, part-time at work thing. So it really is like 10% of moms I've ever known that like full-time have full-time help. And I recognize obviously in many ways that that's a privilege in and of itself. A lot of people don't work because childcare costs outweigh what they would make at their job.
Mm-hmm.
But like for me, it's just truly, I feel a little alone in it. And my brain constantly goes back and forth of, is this making me a worse mom for some reason? I don't know. I think I've come to peace with it though. And I'm now at a stage of I really just love doing what I do for work. And whenever I am doing something for work and my son comes in and I like can't do something with him because I'm working, the way I talk about my work to him is so positive. It's not like, oh, I can't. I'm so sorry. I have to do work. Like, you gotta go. This sucks. I'm like, mommy's making a movie, you know, like, come look. And I let him sit on my lap and he sees what I'm doing. And hopefully, as he ages, he'll be able to tell that I'm passionately working and I'm excited about what I'm doing and that it's not like a chore that's taking me away from him.
I feel like if anything, it's going to be inspiring toward to him because he gets to see that like his mom was working throughout his childhood and was focused on her career still while being a mom. And I think that you should really just look at it as like you are blessed to have the option to do
Yes.
this because I feel like you are just like so lucky right now to have both options at your
I
dispense.
agree. And I have heard on the flip side of that, I have heard from other moms who stopped working, who have come to me for advice of, you know, I really want to get back into working, but it's so hard now and kind of not knowing how to get back. So I agree.
Exactly.
I try to look at it as a blessing. Like, I'm just so grateful that I'm getting to do both and make my own schedule. So figure out when I want to do each.
Speaking of like career in your motherhood, I feel like you're also in your transparency era because you've been making videos about salary and rent throughout your career and the mindset of your time influencing throughout the years. What made you come to this point where you want to be transparent about all of it?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I'm in my transparency era. I love that. It all really started when I came up with the format and I guess like the theme of my new podcast, which is called The Real Stuff. And I knew I wanted to start a podcast. It's been something my audience has been asking for a while. It's something I love listening to podcasts, so I have been feeling inspired to start one. But when I was trying to come up with what my show was going to be and how it was going to be a little different, I realized that for me, the most interesting conversations are the types of conversations that I have in secret with like my best friends, where we open up about really raw, personal, taboo topics. And I had started asking my audience to give me answers to taboo questions, like through story boxes. I was asking people to tell me their salaries. I was asking, taking polls about sex. I was asking people to tell me their secrets, and I was anonymously sharing insights like that. And when I decided to start this podcast and I decided that the three pillars were going to be sex, money, and mental health, it just sort of hit me that, like, I'm about to host this show where I'm going to bring all these guests on and ask them these invasive personal questions. And A, wouldn't it make them feel so much more comfortable to answer the questions if I had already answered them myself? And B, wouldn't it make more sense from the world's perspective to hear me as the host of the show if I'm transparent about this stuff myself? Otherwise, it's kind of like, who is she to host the show? She should be hosting a lifestyle show where she talks about the stuff that she's open about. And so it kind of was just a moment of like, if I want to be this host, I need to be in my transparency era. And then that all started.
From Refinery to YouTube, now podcasting, over the course of your career so far, do you feel like your career goals are continuously changing, or do you still have like a set goal in mind?
I think that I've always said, and I do still feel like my biggest long-term future goal is to host some sort of show. And I can't say specifically if that is a TV show or it doesn't have to be TV. I think like my 1990s brain thinks that TV is where everything is, but you know, in this day and age, it could be on a streaming service, it could be a digital show, doesn't matter where it lives. I just think hosting a show is really it's always been my life's dream, and I feel like it's really conducive to my personality type and my interests. Specifically, if I was going to get really specific with it, some sort of a daily lifestyle talk show with a live audience. I love that energy of live TV. So that's kind of my real dream. However, I'm very open and aware of the fact that this industry is changing every second, not even every day, like every single second. And every day waking up is a huge question mark of what new platform has popped up today, what type of new content is out there, what emails in my inbox, what interesting way of content creators working with brands has just been conceived. And it really is like a big question mark of what's going to come from one day to the next. And I personally love that. I just feel like it keeps it super exciting. And the fact that I have skills outside of just the following on my platform, I know that even if like these platforms went away, I feel like I have marketable production skills that could be translated into any production job anywhere. So I don't know. I have. If what I'm saying, like if a show is not the next iteration, I think in the future I would love to like keep blowing up the podcast, probably have a book at some point, just keep building up my brand in whatever world that takes me to. And my head now tells me it's a show, but I'm so open to what it is. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe I'll be like hosting a cruise. You never know what's gonna come.
Random. I
Random.
know, right? Yeah, it's so true. Everything that you're saying though, like, I feel you so hard. I feel like we are a little bit of like twin flames in that sense, 'cause all of your goals, your journey, I'm like kind of right there with you trying to figure out my way in the media
And
world.
look at you, you're in the corporate world and you have a podcast. That's the way to do it, is to start your own stuff first.
And I try to post consistently on TikTok like twice a day because you know they say like you got to be consistent, you got to do it this many times if you want to go viral. And it's like keeping up with it all is just a lot. But if you
It's a
want to make
lot.
it and you have the vision, like we both do, you got to just stay on top of it.
Yes, and the Honestly, like there's no secrets to the algorithms or how to blow up, but the one thing that you are in control of that you can do is just keep going. Being
Exactly.
consistent, even when you feel like no one's seeing what you're making, it just takes years and years. Like some people blow up overnight, but a lot of people don't. And I honestly think the most successful careers are built off of the slower and steady growth trajectories, so it really takes a long time.
Have you heard the quote, "It takes 10 years to become an overnight success"?
I haven't, but I agree with that.
Every time I feel like things are just going really slowly, I think about that quote and it helps me
Yes.
just keep going.
There's
Okay, so
also another quote I kind of
what?
forget. I forget how it goes, but it's like basically talking about how if you had 2 hours, and you were tasked with cutting down a tree, some people might just like go hacking at the tree right away, and it will take them like the whole 2 hours or longer to knock down the tree. Whereas other people will spend the first hour and a half sharpening the axe, and then like one chop, the tree is down. And it's obviously that's kind of the metaphor is sort of like encouraging people to do one chop and you're an overnight success, but more so, it's the sharpening of the axe is what you're doing every day by showing up consistently. You're just honing your skills, getting better, so that the point at which you do strike and do your biggest, best thing, you've built such a solid foundation beneath you.
Right. The axe is already sharpened and ready to cut down
Yes,
another tree. Okay.
exactly.
I love that. Well, last but not least, I have a bunch of lightning round questions. So it's just a simple yes or no. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Yes or no. Being a content creator is a stable job.
Yes.
Are you still doing any stop motion projects?
Yes. To caveat, incorporating stop motion
You have to
into.
think about that.
Yes, because I'm not doing any like a brand is hiring me to just make a stop motion, but I am incorporating that art form into a lot of content.
Got it. And we didn't even get to talk about stop motion, but
Yes.
people that know that you did the stop motion.
Yes, the real ones know.
Exactly. Content creation is just as busy and challenging as a corporate job.
Yes.
As a content creator, you have to be on every social platform.
No.
You should only become a content creator if you're in a good place with yourself first.
Yes.
Have you ever regretted something you shared online?
No.
Do you ever second guess the content you put out?
Yes.
Do you feel like there are things you have to share with your followers that you may not want to?
No.
Has social media impacted your mental health at all?
Yes.
And that's it. Thank you so much.
It's so interesting to go lightning round on the questions without like diving. It's every question makes me want to tell a story.
I know. And I'm telling you, I can talk about all of this with you for so long, but we both got places to go. And I'm so glad that you took the time to hang out with me today.
Thank you for having me. And we will schedule a separate call to chit chat about life.
Yes, yes, we must. Where can everybody find you? Shout out the YouTube, the podcast, all of it.
All right. On YouTube and Instagram and TikTok, the handle is Lucy B. Fink. So, you know, at Lucy B. Fink, and it's L-U-C-I-E, Lucy. On Instagram, TikTok, YouTube.com/LucyBFink. And then you can also check out The Real Stuff, my new podcast, which is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And it's also being shared in video form on my YouTube channel in its own playlist.
Ooh, I love that. I'm excited to watch. I like watching you podcasts now, so I'm definitely going to go and watch that.
Me too. And all of mine have been virtual so far, but this is my little scene setup. And
oh, I love it.
It's going
it
great.
It looks like the lighting is just immaculate. Meanwhile, my silly little ring light in my dimly lit room.
I've got like 5 lights surrounding me here, and I have this setup so easy. It just put them all on a single what's it called, extension cord, and I just like plug the whole thing in and take the whole thing out, and they boom. Just go on. Yes.
Mm-hmm. One day I'll have 5 lights, but for yes. Now my ring light is what's serving me. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode with Lucy. I hope that you enjoyed, and if you are enjoying this podcast and want to hear more, definitely subscribe to my channel on Spotify or any podcast platform where you listen to your podcasts, and be sure to follow me on social media so you can get all the fun updates at Hotter in Person on Instagram, TikTok, all social media, go, 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 and you have a great rest of your week, and I will see you for episode 6.